Welcome to the Movie Planet Podcast. This week we are continuing our look at the Die Hard franchise with the fourth movie in the series, Live Free or Die Hard. With Joe!
On your tombstone, it should read, always in the wrong place.
And JC.
Hello. Yippee-ki-yay.
This week we're talking the fourth movie in the John McClane series, Live Free or Die Hard. Starring Bruce Willis as John McClane, Timothy Oliphant as Thomas Gabriel, Justin Long as Matt Farrell, Maggie Q as Mai Lin, Cliff Curtis as FBI Deputy Director Miguel Bowman, Jonathan Sadowski as Trey, Andrew Friedman as Casper, and Kevin Smith as Frederick Warlock Kaloudis. Directed by Len Wiseman, so no McTiernan this time.
Nope.
We'll see if he could do what Rennie Harlan could not.
Which was make a great movie.
Now, there's a little trivia to go with this. First, the movie budget was $110 million, and it grossed $383. It's the highest grossing Die Hard movie.
And I agree, because it's really good.
It was also the highest grossing film of 2007.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
It took 4 months to assemble and combine archive footage of past American presidents from Franklin Roosevelt to George Bush to create the televised warning from Gabriel.
I actually wondered that.
The goal was to create a video representation of a ransom note.
Oh, no, I completely got it. But when I watched it, I'm like, that had to have taken a very long time to make.
4 months. Wow. This is good. Bruce Willis's stunt double, Larry Rippenkroger, was seriously injured when he fell 25 feet to the pavement. He suffered broken bones in his face and fractures in both wrists. Production was temporarily shut down. So what does Willis do? He picks up the tab at the area hotels for Larry's parents and visits him a number of times at the hospital.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
I've only heard good things about Willis.
He
always seems like a good guy.
That's good.
Yeah. The film addresses the apparent continuity error in earlier installments, where McClane is afraid of flying in Die Hard and Die Hard 2, but not Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Oh.
Here, he explains that he took flying lessons in order to face his fears.
Nice.
But he didn't exactly face them. It sounded like he was lying to Justin Long when he said it.
Oh, yeah. I completely saw that.
Dude, you got to talk into the mic. You can't be like back here.
No, yeah, I know. I saw.
He's eating an ice cream cone right now, doing his best to make sure that ice cream doesn't fly onto the microphone that he's on. So he's being very respectful of the microphone. So give him credits for that.
It's good.
I know it is. In the beginning credits, when Kevin Smith's name comes on the screen, the M in Smith disappears and you see Sith for a few seconds paying homage to Kevin Smith's love for all things Star Wars.
Nice.
The first sequel in the series where no character mentions John McClane's encounter at the Nakatomi Plaza in L.A. in Die Hard. However, visual references to Nakatomi Plaza are seen while Thomas Gabriel is looking at John McClane's dossier. The elevator shaft sequence was not in the film's script when Len Wiseman was hired as director. Wiseman added it because he associated elevator shafts and claustrophobic spaces with Die Hard.
Oh, really? Well, that's interesting.
Well, hey, you
plus, got... Plus, I mean, that harkens back to the original because there was elevator stuff there.
There's an elevator scene in every single Die Hard, so I guess it's one of those things that's got to stay in there.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yet this
and
did
I've
not.
Seen them all recently, so
yet,
that was weird.
Yet this staple of Die Hard movies did not. The first Die Hard film where no reference is made to Christmas.
No, it's 4th of July.
Yep.
That's okay. I'm all right with that.
No Christmas music in a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
That's like no lightsabers in a Star Wars movie.
Well, no, I'm not okay with that.
Okay. Well, enjoy Rogue One. Oh, wait, Vader's
I was going to say Vader's going to be there. So
Darn it. The film was edited down to a PG-13 rating for commercial reasons. Thus making it the first film in the series not rated R. The DVD version is unrated and restores much of the profanity and violence that was trimmed for this purpose, making the film an equivalent of an R rating.
Oh, is that? I was going to say, because when I watched it, I'm like, there's a lot of cursing and stuff in it.
Yep. The script was not originally written to be a Die Hard sequel, so I guess that's another movie that was never supposed to be a Die Hard sequel.
Yeah, I like this movie.
Die Hard with a Vengeance wasn't supposed to be one. That was supposed to be Lethal Weapon.
That's true.
Samuel L. Jackson was at one point rumored to be playing Zeus Carver again in this movie.
Really?
Which,
now that you've seen the movie, that would have felt forced.
Yes. Director Len Wiseman credits actor Timothy Oliphant for coming up with the idea of how McClane kills Gabriel. In order to keep it a secret, the scene was not included in the film's shooting script.
Oh, really?
Yep. And finally, in the scene where all the lights turn green to cause an accident, A scene from The Italian Job is shown on monitors watching the crash.
That's funny.
There's Live Free or Die Hard trivia right there. Was this a movie? I know. Was this a movie that you were looking forward to watching?
I was very excited. I love this. And if I'm being honest, this is probably my favorite Die Hard. But yeah. I also know I can't say that over the original Die Hard because you don't get it. But I do enjoy watching this movie. Die Hard, I honestly feel like I have to watch because it started so much. And I do still agree with my A rating. I do. But if I want to enjoy a Die Hard movie, this is the one I think of.
So
I always think of this movie and I love it. It's very, very hard for me to find something I don't like about this movie.
So if you were being completely unbiased here, would you grade Live Free or Die Hard higher than Die Hard?
Yeah, I would.
So you're going to change your grade.
I'm actually doing it right now.
We're removing Die Hard from the pantheon of action movies. I'm just clearing that right now. Removing that from the pantheon by you changing that grade to an A minus. Because I'm sure that's where you're going, is an A minus.
Yeah, I already had it as an A minus.
I'm okay with you saying that's the same. It's at that level and just updated to 2007.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Okay, so you're not going to lower it. You're going to keep it an A.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not lowering Die Hard out of the pantheon.
Okay.
Because in all honesty, you don't get Live Free or Die Hard without having the original, so I got to give it props. I'm just saying I personally cannot find a whole lot wrong with it to lower the grade.
Okay, how about this? Based on our rules with the pantheons, if we had 7 in the action movies.
Yes.
And this movie was number 8.
Yes.
Could you argue your way into dropping Die Hard to throw this in there?
Yes, I could, yes.
Okay. That's it. I can understand that then.
Yeah, I could.
All right.
You wouldn't let me. You'd rip me a new one, but...
No. You'd have to sell me on it, and I would be open to it because you know how I feel about nostalgia.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I can't argue nostalgia because I do watch this movie pretty regularly.
Yes. So. For me, I was kind of looking forward to it. Yeah. You hit Die Hard first. You hit Die Hard 2 next.
Which I will never, ever watch again.
Then Die Hard with a Vengeance. I was like, oh, yes, here we go. And I remember seeing this in theaters. I remember it was one of the first Die Hards that I bought on Blu-ray.
First one ever I bought.
But at the same time, I've probably watched it once or twice since I bought it in 2008 or 9 or 10, whenever it was. And then just stayed on the shelf because when I want to grab a Die Hard movie, I grab Die Hard. I don't grab this one.
And I get that. If I had it, I would probably grab this one over Die Hard. If I wanted to watch a Die Hard movie, this is the movie I would grab. Live Free or Die Hard.
But I also think the reason why I grab it so many times is because every Christmas I have to watch Die Hard because it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
You know, 4th of July, I'm going to throw this in.
I actually do watch this around 4th of July.
Well, I mean, let's think of our 4th of July movies. Independence Day is one you got to watch.
Yeah.
Okay. What else is there?
Live Free or Die Hard.
For you. There you go.
Yeah. I'm just.
Yeah.
I mean, you're outside most of 4th of July. I'm just saying if there's a movie I watch on 4th of July, it's usually Independence Day or Live Free or Die Hard.
Okay. Well, let's get into the synopsis here.
Synopsis.
Yes. Hacker Matt Farrell, not knowing who he is working for, finishes work on a computer program and sends it to Mai Lin, who advises her boss and lover, Thomas Gabriel, that they can now proceed with their operation. Gabriel's operation begins by killing the hackers he's hired. This is very Joker-esque in The Dark Knight.
Oh, it really is.
This involves using a virus he has implanted that detonates wired explosives attached to the hackers' computers when they press the delete key and commencing the initial stages of a computer attack on U.S. government networks. Now, this is a pretty cool start.
Oh, I love it. I think it's a great opening. Plus, it very much modernizes everything.
It totally sets the tone.
Yeah.
Like, we are not Die Hard 1, 2, or 3. We are in a technological age.
Yes. And I even remember with the promos, the whole, like, he's an analog in a digital age. Like, I liked that. I thought that was awesome.
I thought it was a great way to start it. The only thing I wondered was, how did they get all these explosives in people's houses without people knowing?
Well, that's really not that difficult. Because at some point, these guys would have to leave. Mm-hmm. Or... they would possibly do it while they're sleeping, et cetera, things like that. Yeah. That wasn't as much of a stretch for me.
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. When I first started, when the scene starts, you see the two guys just sitting there, and the one guy comes in the house, and he's like, hey, you know, you touch my stuff? You already know something's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you don't know to what degree.
Yeah.
And he's playing with a computer, and you're like, oh, they're going to shut his hard drive down or something. No, they blew the house up.
Yeah.
Gone.
Yep.
So that's our beginning. We know that this is going to be a cyber movie.
Yep.
Meanwhile, a young couple is making out in a car at Rutgers University in New Jersey. NYPD Detective John McClane breaks it up. The girl turns out to be his estranged daughter, Lucy. And boy, has she grown up.
Oh, I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
She leaves in a huff, refusing to acknowledge her father's last name, but calling herself instead by her mother's maiden name, Gennaro.
And that's one of the first things I'm like, okay, that's the first diehardism. But also it makes me wonder, like, why is that such a thing? Like, what has he done? And it was one of my frustrations is, like, at the beginning of all of these diehards, they make McClane out to be an absolute asshole, horrible husband, horrible father. Every single one. And I know he's going to go on and have his dialogue and all that stuff about being a hero and all this. But I want to know, why does he need to be a horrible father? Why does he need to be an asshole? Because we know he's going to save her at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But then what? He's just going to be an asshole again because we need to make another. It's like, why can the guy never catch a break? Or what is it that he does so horribly? Because I have a hard time believing that he is only a hero when it comes to his job. Mm-hmm. No, if he knows how to be a hero to other human beings, he knows how to be a hero to his family.
John McClane has not had a happy ending since Die Hard 2.
No, and it's just... But I feel like they're screwing him over just for plot devices.
Yeah.
So maybe, there's a complaint. That can knock it down from an A to an A-. I'm kind of sick of everybody having, or of the directors and making diehards being like, well, McClane's got to be a horrible husband and a terrible father in order for us to move the plot along.
With no visual evidence of him being this.
Exactly. So yeah, that lowers it to an A- for me. That pisses me off.
Simultaneously, the FBI command center's computers are momentarily interrupted, leading Deputy Director Bowman to order a roundup of all the hackers who could conceivably have been involved. Smart move. That's exactly what they were doing.
That's exactly what would happen.
McClane is sent to pick up Farrell in Camden, and his arrival interrupts the hacker just before he performs the operation, which would detonate his computer. Gabriel's assassins, who had the apartment under surveillance to confirm Farrell's death, open fire. McClane kills several thugs who enter the apartment. And Justin Long is great in this scene.
Oh, I love Justin Long in this so movie. Good. I love him in this movie.
Debris from the shootout sets off the explosion of Farrell's computer, destroying the apartment. McClane and Farrell escape down the fire escape, McClane killing various henchmen on the way, and Farrell astonished by McClane's calmness during the ordeal.
One of my favorite scenes in the movie is when he is driving down the street with the fence. And the guy's on the fence. Mm-hmm. And even you can genuinely tell that McClane has no fucking clue how this is going to work out. And that's what I kind of like, because a lot of these are people like, oh, really? He's going to take a helicopter out with a car?
Yeah.
McClane or John or wow, John.
John McClane.
Bruce Willis does not play this like, oh, I know. He literally plays it like, I'm going to try this and I have no idea if it's going to work or not. And the face that Bruce Willis makes is John McClane. When that fence hits the dumpster and that guy flips over and hits the ground, his face was like, huh, like, I can't believe that actually worked. And like that is a sense of reality and just sort of coolness that I really like about this.
And this is what I didn't like, because he's never been cool in these situations. He's always been kind of frantic. And, oh gosh, he's always been the everyman in the situation.
But he still is.
And now he's a superhero.
No, he's not. Nothing he did was super.
No.
It was just lucky.
His attitude is, yeah, okay, this is what we do. Come on. This doesn't happen every single day. And we've seen him in the three movies where he's had that panic button inside of him. And we're not seeing it yet.
Well, maybe that's the change. With all of this, personal life where he's been screwed over, he just doesn't panic anymore.
But who knows? They may change later on in the movie here.
That's true. Let's go.
Okay. As McClane makes it to Washington, D.C. with his charge, Gabriel sabotages the nation's network of traffic signals, rail transport, and air traffic control. Chaos on the roads ensues. Gabriel also forces the evacuation of numerous federal buildings with a false anthrax alarm. With some of his men infiltrating a Maryland facility by posing as a hazmat cleanup team to sneak in and kill the guards. This is an awful lot of stuff to do for a computer hacking.
Yeah, but it also felt so realistic because we were so close to 9/11. I mean, this is 2007.
Yeah.
This is only a couple of years after. And I don't even think had the commission report been released yet.
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it had yet.
So a lot of our speculation was still running wild. So like all of this, as you're watching all this happen, you're like, holy cow, this is totally believable. Like, I could believe that a truck full of hackers could bring this whole shit down.
Yeah, and directorially, I think I would have liked to have seen a little more McTiernan-ish in this, because what he was good at doing was letting you know where something was taking place. And there's a lot of shots that just go skip, 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 and you have no idea where they are at the moment. There's no sign saying, oh, this is this plant, this is this. You usually have that in a McTiernan film.
They kind of set
it up for you. And so there were times when I watched this when I was kind of like, wait, which place are they at again? Because everybody looks the same in these places.
Okay.
So that's a nitpicky thing. I'm not going to let that cloud this thing. After arriving at the temporary FBI office, Farrell recognizes the pictures of the dead hackers on the wall, but denies knowing who they are. Gabriel broadcasts the message threatening the nation using spliced video clips of the last 12 presidents and then sabotages the nation's financial systems.
Dun, dun, dun.
Now, there's something that happens in between here that kind of... didn't the car ride where they're talking about Creedence Clearwater Revival happen?
Yes. He's like, just because it's old doesn't make it good or classic.
Justin Long's character at this point, I hated him.
But you were supposed to. He's supposed to be a young punk and all this stuff.
And that's the thing. I have to remember. I'm probably closer to Willis's age than I am to Justin Long's when it comes to mentality.
Yeah.
And I'm watching this going, first of all, he doesn't know who CCR is. What, you've never watched a TV show in your life? It's everywhere. It's on commercials, for God's sakes.
Yeah, I know.
Second thing was him talking about, it's all government conspiracy. And I'm laughing. And then I'm sitting there laughing because I'm like, so let me get this straight. You, a hacker who's against governmental stuff, isn't into music during a time when people were rebelling against government stuff.
Yep.
Irony at its finest, the millennials.
But of course, exactly. But that's why I loved it. He played the authenticity of the character.
Yeah.
And I thought he did a great job. A lot of people give Justin Long shit. I think he did fantastic in this movie.
I thought
he did great.
I will argue in this movie that the pairing between Justin Long and Bruce Willis may be stronger than any other pairing in any movie.
Yes, I thought it worked very well.
And that's hard to say with Samuel L. Jackson, the last one, but this one...
I related to it more. I felt like the other one, it was good,
yeah.
But the other one was, it was all about the race relations and things like that. This one was the age gap. You're dealing with the age gap, which is, maybe that's more personal for me because...
No, at the end of this movie, yeah. I thought, at the end of... Die Hard with a Vengeance, I thought, okay, this is Jackson's last one. He's in. Yeah. One and done. But this one, I was like, Justin Long should be in the next one because of the rapport that they have at the end.
I really wanted him to end up with Mary Winstead, but oh well.
Farrell and McClane are redirected by the FBI to the Department of Homeland Security so that Farrell can be interrogated. While they are on their way, Gabriel begins downloading a huge quantity of significant data from the Maryland facility onto his own computers.
But we don't know what it is yet.
Right. McClane, Farrell, and their FBI escort attempt to contact the police to have a route opened up for them, but have their radio communication intercepted by Gabriel and Lynn, who direct them to an ambush. Hottest hacker ever, by the way.
Yeah, and I love how her shirt is literally cut to reveal the cleavage.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea if they actually make those shirts in the world, like outside of actual wardrobe things for movies. But if they make shirts that literally are cut just to cover the areolas and reveal everything else in the middle, I so want to get them for my wife. Not that she would ever actually wear it, but I'm just being bluntly honest.
Yes.
I mean, like, girls should wear, because it was a fancy shirt, but you literally could see everything but the areolas in the middle, and it was nice. I'm okay with that.
McClane suspects the communication has been intercepted, so he tests Lynn by asking her about a certain police radio code, and when she says they've had to dispatch all units to this type of call, McClane reveals then that the actual code is for naked people, exposing the fact that she's lying.
Yep.
So, I think it's a 581 or something.
What are you dealing with the 587s out there? And they're like, we had to dispatch all units, and he's like, you had to dispatch all units for all the naked people running around? Get your boss, honey. I just love that. Put your boss on.
And I'm like, you know, they've thought of everything. They don't have the police code just in case something like this would happen.
Yeah.
You know, little thing like that. Nitpicky. Gabriel gets on the radio and advises...
The more nitpicky thing, to cut you off a little bit,
yeah.
I thought it hilarious that the one girl with the sexy voice, probably the most recognizable voice, is the one that's interacting with everybody.
Yeah.
Like, when Justin Long figures out it's her later, I'm like, why the fuck is she doing all the talking? Let some random generic guy do the talking.
Right.
That was kind of like, you shot yourselves in the foot. No shit, he figured it out, because if you hear a feminine sexy voice, you're going to recognize it.
Exactly. Gabriel gets on the radio and advises McClane he knows everything about him, wipes out his financial portfolio, and offers him a bribe to kill Farrell. McClane refuses. At this point, you know why? Because he's got nothing to lose, dumbass. Way to write yourself into a corner with that.
I was going
to
say, you just took everything from him, so what the hell else does he got?
McClane and Farrell attempt to evade the ensuing ambush, but are set upon by a helicopter, which just happens to show up. McClane and Farrell escape the ambush in a police car and are chased into a tunnel by the helicopter. Gabriel opens the traffic on both sides of the tunnel, sandwiching our heroes in a massive pileup in the middle. McClane drives straight out of the tunnel and jumps at the last second before launching the car up a toll barrier into the helicopter, killing most of the thugs. The one survivor mistakenly tells Gabriel that their targets have been killed. Can we talk about this scene?
Okay, go ahead. Say your bit, and then I'll rebuttal.
This is the worst CGI in the film.
Oh, I didn't even know it was CGI.
The ducking between the two cars as the one car jumps on top.
Oh, that was pretty bad. That's bad CGI.
When they get behind a wall, that's bad CGI.
Oh, I didn't know that was CGI.
Mm-hmm.
So it must not have been that bad if I didn't notice. But the car flipping on the two cars, that was bad CGI.
Okay. The fact that everybody's in a tunnel and no one has their friggin' headlights on.
They turn them on.
Yeah, after the lights go off. But you normally when you go in a tunnel, everybody turns their friggin' lights on.
Is that a rule now?
Well,
because I feel like there were all the, yeah,
there's usually one or two people.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And even so, once you saw the headlights coming the other way, you'd stop.
Well, there's some stupid drivers out there.
I
would
get that.
Would the pileup be as bad as the movie made it look? No. Would there still be a pileup? Yes. I think the pileup would more be just cars stopped right against each other.
Yeah.
I don't think you would have had the massive collisions that existed. That I agree with.
And my final pitch, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
Is I've been driving for a long time.
Yeah.
I have never seen a pylon that acted as a ramp without a stopping point at it. I've never seen one.
Wait, say that again?
Well, when they say he launches the car up,
yeah.
There's usually a wall blocking that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was,
it doesn't look cool in a movie.
Thank you. Okay, now you go.
Well, you actually didn't rip it apart as much as you were going to. I was going to say.
I told you, I'm not going to kill this thing.
The one thing that I do like, I agree with all of that, and you're right. Would a car actually been able to launch in a helicopter? No. But I do like that before McClane jumps out of the car, he looks pretty fine. After that, he is beat to hell.
Well, it's because he stands up and the car gets slams him. He should have his back broken at that point. He's a 60-year-old man.
No. When he jumps out of the car and rolls.
No, when he gets out of the car and he's standing there and the first car hits the car that they were in.
Yeah?
He gets slammed by the back end of it.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, I thought it was cool that when he did the barrel roll, mm-hmm. the next shot you see him bloodied and bruised and his ribs are hurting and all this stuff.
Yeah.
That was a sense of realism that I actually liked. I wouldn't have been surprised if he would have just popped up and been fine and been like, no, I would have been like, that's stupid. That was really horrible.
Yeah.
But I liked that they sort of beat him up a little bit. I thought that was realistic at least.
I'll give it this. It was a cool scene to try to pull off.
It really was.
I mean, I'd never seen something like that before at that level.
And it does give Justin Long a great quote. You just killed a helicopter with a car, man. Yeah. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Justin Long as the audience member.
Which is awesome. I loved it.
McClane and Farrell escape on foot, but as they try to contact the FBI via cell phone, they discover that Gabriel has also sabotaged the telecommunications networks. Gabriel then takes over the nation's television signals and broadcasts the demolition of the U.S. Capitol building.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bowman and McClane each run into the street for a clear view and see that the footage was faked. Farrell admits that he recognized some of the dead hackers from their pictures. I almost said dead hookers.
You did?
Dead hackers from their pictures, and that he innocently wrote some code that may be being used in this computer attack. Oops.
Sorry.
Which appears to be a three-stage plan to cripple the United States, beginning with attacks on its transportation and financial infrastructures, which have already been accomplished.
And the third stage is to...
power grid.
Yep.
This cannot be done remotely, but requires intervention at the actual physical plants. Farrell confesses that he had always viewed hacking as harmless pranks, but is now horrified by the actual damage and suffering caused. He reconfigures the cell phone to use a different network to allow them to communicate.
All right.
I
liked that whole scene.
I thought
it set up the whole situation and connected those two characters really well.
I like the fact that they put limits to the power and that they can only do so much without having to be on site.
Yeah. Well, that's reality.
It's reality, but so far in this movie, they've pushed reality a little bit, and they could have pushed it here.
And they didn't.
And I think they stopped because they realized they have made Thomas Gabriel way too powerful already.
But
give him a limit now.
But is Thomas Gabriel really the one doing it, or is he just the mind behind all of these hackers? He has organized all of this.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking he can turn anything off at any point. And they allude to something later on, which we'll get to when he meets the Warlock, where they knew Thomas Gabriel.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you walk into an NSA room and you'd say, I can shut everything down with a laptop. They may laugh you out of the room, but they're going to start making contingencies for this.
I was going to say, the NSA is going to start watching you like a hawk.
Yes.
Yeah.
But again, this shows some fallibility in our enemy.
Yeah.
And it shows a chance. There's hope there that anybody can squeeze through, not just John McClane.
Yep.
McClane and Farrell commandeer an abandoned car by pretending to be the son of its owner in a medical emergency, which is great.
Yeah, that whole scene was great.
The OnStar was watching Bruce Willis almost give every scene to Justin Long when it came to trying to get the plot going.
Yeah.
This OnStar scene was brilliant. He was like, I can fix this. And first of all, he hits him with the airbag.
That was so funny. He's like, oh, did I catch you there?
Did you not see that coming?
And then he was like McClane just rips out the airbag. And Justin Long's like, how'd you do that?
His little Mac arms are pulling at it.
How'd you do that?
But the whole, like, you know, my dad is, he's really hurt. I got to get to a hospital. And it works.
It did work.
And it's like.
Although it now makes you wonder, that probably never worked again. After this movie went out, it never worked again.
But these are things that somebody who was technologically advanced in mind would know how to do at that time. Farrell gets the car's OnStar system to remotely start it for them. They set off for the main power station in West Virginia, which controls the eastern seaboard. Farrell, who tends to avoid taking action by citing numerous minor medical conditions and phobias, admits to McClane that he doesn't feel capable of heroism. And now we have one of our greatest conversations.
I love this conversation. It's probably my favorite part of the movie.
Yeah, this is him talking about what it takes to be a hero and what the benefits and or consequences are in reality.
Yep.
And it's the beginning of our section of the movie here. We put the clip at the very beginning of this because it tells you everything you need to know about John McClane at this point.
Yep.
Could we have used this information earlier to set him up more? Probably, but I think it's well placed here.
Yeah, because at this point, he's holding his cards to his chest. Now he trusts this kid.
Yeah.
Now he's working with this kid. They're partners in a way.
Lynn and a group of henchmen disguised as FBI agents, meanwhile, have entered the power station, shot the guards, and taken over the facility.
Now, you were talking about realism. Yes. I loved this scene as well.
Okay.
Because they threw all the FBI stuff, sort of acting like, oh, this is going to let us in. And the guards are literally, from the moment that copter sat down, they're like, no, I don't care if you're FBI. You're not supposed to be here. You don't. And
yeah.
Then they're gunned down anyway. And it just sort of made me chuckle. And I'm like, see, not everybody falls for the fake jacket or the fake badge, whatever trick. Although it did end up them getting killed, so that doesn't.
They lost either way. As they commence shutdown procedures, McClane and Farrell arrive. Their presence is detected, and henchmen are dispatched to kill them. McClane and Farrell fight their way to the station's command center. McClane fights Lynn, and Farrell manages to abort the shutdown sequence. McClane finally kills Lynn by driving a truck into her and down an elevator shaft where the truck explodes at the bottom.
Cool scene.
It's an amazing scene. Although I'm kind of wondering, at what point when you're driving that car, do you realize I may hit a cement wall and die now?
I don't think he cared at that point.
Yeah. You think he was just kind of like, okay, we're just ending the thing now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that he knew somebody was above them yet?
No.
Like the Gabriel existed? Did he know yet?
No.
Okay. He may have just thought it was the female.
Yes, he did, because he said, put your boss on.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Right. He said, put your boss on earlier. So yes, he did.
Okay. Farrell saves McClane by killing one thug, knocking him from behind down the shaft, which is kind of a funny fall because they show him falling, then they cut to something else, and then they show another clip of him still falling.
Yeah, it was funny.
Farrell, seeing that the shutdown hasn't taken place yet, Gabriel calls Lynn's cell phone, and McClane answers and tells Gabriel that his plan has been foiled and Lynn killed. I believe he said, and that little Asian ninja. I was like, wow, they're going to go there.
Yeah, he really pisses off Gabriel.
Yeah. I don't think that line would have played in 2016.
No, you're right. It probably wouldn't. Not today.
That would not have. We are way too PC for that comment.
No.
And not to mention, it would turn audiences on him at that point, I think. The sensitive audiences that we have.
But obviously it was popular back then because it made $300 million.
Yay. I think a lot of it was in China.
How we've changed.
Yeah, really. McClane answers and tells Gabriel that his plan has been foiled and Lynn killed. Enraged, Gabriel redirects all the natural gas in the pipelines to converge on the power station.
That was a bit of a, I'm not sure you have that much power. That was the one, that was one of the instances where I'm like, I don't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't buy, just because you change the flow of the natural gas, the exploding pipe.
Yeah.
Those pipes only hold natural gas.
Right.
So what's causing the explosion?
I think that the number of, the amount of damage that he did in, first of all, Gabriel wouldn't have known the damage that he did in there.
Yeah.
There's sparks flying. I mean, there's ways to spark these types of
flames. No, but what I'm saying is it was exploding from way out.
Oh, remember, right. Yeah,
there's that
right.
scene where you're literally watching the pipe explode as it's coming towards.
Yeah.
And that was the one moment where I'm like, no,
mm-hmm.
that's not what would happen. If you change the flow of the gas would just start flowing in the other direction.
That scene was like a callback to the water pipeline and
yeah,
engines.
You're right. It was.
And this is the exact same thing he just did in the tunnel.
Yeah.
He just redirected something else to all of them.
Yep.
So Farrell notices this on one of the computer screens, and he and McClane take shelter just before the station explodes, surviving that. Gabriel once again believes the pair to be dead. The destruction of the station causes a massive power blackout over Washington and much of the eastern seaboard. Lucy McClane is caught in an elevator in the back blackout.
Dun dun dun! Foreshadowing.
There was a bad shot in this, and that was when they get out and McClane go. They show McClane's face as he steps out of the building, and he goes, "Oh my god!" And it pans around to him, and as it's panning, you start to see things shut down.
Yeah,
he wouldn't be able to comment until he saw that. It wasn't happening yet, so that's a shot issue.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't have caught that, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But other than that, it's a solid scene outside the fact that they're indestructible.
Yeah, when that van slams up against the wall,
somebody
should have broken a bone.
You've got a 60-year-old man and a guy who's never done sports. I'm sorry, they aren't built for this.
Yeah.
Farrell and McClane decide to visit the Warlock, which is my favorite scene in the movie.
And I want his basement. Like that basement and all of his stuff. I wanted all of it.
That's a legitimate place to do this podcast.
Yes, that would be a great place to do this podcast.
In Baltimore, who Farrell describes as an internet Jedi. Traffic being a nightmare, McClane chooses to fly the helicopter that Lynn and her henchmen had used to arrive at the power station. McClane reveals he had a few flying lessons, but never completed the course. They have a rough landing in Baltimore. Meanwhile, first of all, how do we spot the house? It should be the only one with power on. Baltimore is a pretty big city. How do you know where to look?
Well, obviously he'd been there before. Because it seemed like he had a rapport with Warlock's mother.
And he did, didn't he?
It seemed like the mom was supposed to recognize him. Like, he was even like, I'm Matthew. Mm-hmm. You should know who Matthew is.
Yeah.
This is my friend.
You're right. Because I was going to sit there and say, you know, most of these hackers don't know where they live for anonymity's sake. And here you have a case where everybody knows where everybody lives.
Yeah.
But... Again, you're right. They knew each other beforehand, apparently.
Maybe obviously.
They must have gone to school together or something.
They said they went to camp together.
Camp?
Camp.
Did they?
That's what he said.
I don't recall.
This is my friend from camp.
You're going to remember a lot more details from this than I will.
That's true, I will.
Yeah.
It's a good movie.
So they have a rough landing in Baltimore. Meanwhile, Gabriel and a few select henchmen kill his other remaining computer engineers to eliminate witnesses, and Traveling Light set out in a semi-trailer with a mobile computer command center in the back. This was cool.
That was cool.
Yeah, that was a cool way to keep it going is, you know, don't have a set area that you are.
Yep.
Move it around. Which was very much what they did in Die Hard with a Vengeance. They never stayed in one place. He was always going someplace else to transmit what he wanted to say. McClane and the Warlock lives in his mother's basement, where he has set up his own quote unquote command center, an impressive collection of computers running on his own generators, interspersed with geek memorabilia.
Here's the thing. That was a bit of a stretch because I know we want to make the whole joke about the nerd that lives in his basement. But if you look at the amount of stuff he had, he had to have bank. And if he had that much money to afford all of the stuff in his basement, why wasn't he living in his own place?
Because he can't afford the rent because he's buying all the shit.
All right, fine.
The Warlock is suspicious of the police, but reluctantly agrees to help. He reveals that Gabriel was formerly a highly placed FBI computer security director, responsible for building much of the system, who discovered its vulnerabilities to attack. When Gabriel brought these vulnerabilities to the attention of his supervisors, ultimately interrupting a meeting of the Joint Chiefs to do so, he was denounced and publicly humiliated. I don't know if they would publicly humiliate somebody like this if it was an NSA meeting.
That was a bit of a stretch, but I could also see them, if he's a whistleblower going out and saying all these problems are, mm-hmm. look at what they instantly did with Snowden.
Yeah, you're right.
They did publicly humiliate him. Mm-hmm. It's only a month or so later after everybody went through everything that realized, oh, they were mocking Snowden, but he was actually right in everything he did.
Snowden happened before this, right?
No.
It was after?
Snowden happened after.
For some reason, I thought it was before, and it was kind of like one of those people were like, oh, we're kind of in this age now.
No, Snowden first released his stuff in 2011.
Okay. Yep. The Warlock tells Farrell that he has been examining the type of code he was hired to write, and that it is only being used at one facility, the one in Maryland. Off to another state.
Dun, dun,
They've been in three states in this movie.
And that was another, speaking of this whole states thing, that was another instance where when they come into West Virginia, all of a sudden now, like they drove from D.C. to the West Virginia border, and that's the first time that he says, hey, that was really clever what you did back there.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a bit of a stretch for me.
And I don't like to say this, but it's the Star Wars pacing of time.
Yes.
You know, light speed in one direction is much slower someplace else.
Yep.
Gabriel is alerted to Warlock's intrusions. He traces the intrusion back to Warlock's basement command center and commandeers Warlock's computer and webcam to communicate with McLean. He shows McLean images of his daughter in the elevator and advises that he is going to get her. McLean sets off to find and kill Gabriel. He tells Farrell to stay behind, but Farrell insists on helping him. Why? I have no idea. Under the ruse of a rescue, Lucy is brought to Gabriel at the data facility. A chip off the old block, she fights all the way before being tied up.
See, I think I do know why he went. Okay. I think Matthew Farrell has grown to respect McLean as this has gone on.
Yes.
Matthew Farrell has just learned from the Warlock who is actually behind this and what's going on and all this stuff. Once Matthew Farrell realizes this is all about technology, he is watching a man who is going to go to his death, and that man is going to have a clue what to do.
Yeah.
So Farrell says to himself, I have to go because McLean's not going to know how to do anything.
Yeah.
He won't admit it. He's just going to go and he's going to fight guys and think that fixes it. But Farrell knows, no, I need to take a keyboard. I need to type. I need to do this stuff. And McLean can't do that. So that's why I think Farrell goes.
Okay. I think in some way, Bruce Willis was kind of expecting him to. Because when he gets in the car, he's kind of like, okay, we're going.
Yep.
You know, in another situation where he needs the other guy more than the other guy needs him.
Yep.
McLean and Farrell communicate with Bowman and show him an image of Gabriel. Bowman is dismayed.
Oh.
He tells them that the facility still running, part of the National Security Agency, was designed by Gabriel as a failsafe in the event of an attack on the nation's infrastructure. The initial attack on the FBI had triggered the download to that facility of all the financial data from stock markets, corporations, and government agencies. Gabriel apparently intends to download this information onto mobile hard drives, allowing him to undetectably siphon off billions of dollars. So we're back to another robbery.
Yep, it was just a robbery.
Which...
that's Die Hard.
At this point, before this happened, I was sitting there going, what is this guy's motivation?
Yep, it's just money.
And it's just money again.
Yep. Hmm. Shouldn't I be paid for my good work, John? Shouldn't I be paid for what I'm worth?
Yeah, yeah. But your money won't be good if you destroy everything. Doesn't he know this?
Well, isn't that...
He essentially is saying, I'm going to make sure that by destroying all this, the money I'm going to be getting will be worthless.
Yep.
So what was the point?
Hey, it's not my fault that evil geniuses aren't genius.
Hans Gruber was smart. He kept it small.
Did he?
70, Nakatomi.
70 million?
Nakatomi Tower.
70 million?
Okay. He didn't hit the Capitol Records building. He hit Nakatomi Tower.
All right. Let's get on to the F-35.
The what?
The
I know.
The ship. McLean and Farrell head to the data facility, but Gabriel is alerted to their presence. Farrell realizes that the code he wrote was designed to defeat the security at the last door to the facility's main databanks and slipping in as McLean distracts Gabriel's men. Manages to encrypt all the data that Gabriel has downloaded, making it useless to them without the decryption key, which he alone knows.
Ha-ha!
He is subsequently captured by Gabriel's thug and brought to the control center where Lucy is also captive. When he suggests to Lucy that she needs to be less confrontational with their heavily armed adversaries, Lucy tells him he needs to show more bravery and resolve.
Bitch.
McLean kills the various thugs sent to stop him and communicates with Farrell via one of the thugs' walkie-talkies. Gabriel attempts to talk McLean down, but is unable to do so. He puts Lucy on the radio to talk some sense into her father. But she tells him, now they're down to only five, Dad. The bad guys escape in two vehicles, Gabriel, two thugs, and the captives in an emergency service van, and one thug in a semi-trailer carrying their portable computer control center. McClane jumps onto the back of the semi-truck. As it leaves the facility, he climbs into the cab, shoots the driver through the door, and gives chase to the remaining bad guys, while they're in a car and he's in a semi. In the van, Gabriel orders Farrell to unlock the data, but Farrell refuses, knowing that this is his only bargaining chip and that Gabriel will kill him once he has the data back. Bowman orders an F-35 fighter plane to dispatch to intercept the van after McClane contacts him via Warlock's CB radio link.
You want to go on to the next part with the F-35 so you can really get into this for yourself?
Oh, sure.
Okay, you hit it.
All right, Gabriel realizes they are being chased. He obtains the go codes for the fighter plane by accessing the military's databanks, which by this point I probably think would have been shut down or locked off or on a closed system. So that's another bit of a stretch. And impersonates military commanders to order the pilot to destroy the semi-truck. The F-35 fires various missiles and artillery at the truck. That's a tough truck.
No shit!
causing McClane to break off his chase and move to a ramp leading to a bridge. The F-35 virtually destroys the truck, but miraculously not the cab, and a large portion of the ramp. As the truck begins to slide backwards down the destroyed ramp, McClane falls out of the cab and down to the back of the ravaged trailer. He is then damaged by a chunk of falling pavement. McClane falls onto the plane's wing. The pilot ejects. Yeah, that's right. The F-35 came out of nowhere. The pilot ejects, and McClane slides down the spiraling plane and jumps onto another section of the destroyed ramp before the plane explodes in a fiery ball of coolness.
So
that whole scene was really cool, but totally unrealistic.
He's turned into Captain America.
Yes.
And
where he threw the shield in the propellers and blew it all up.
The only thing missing was the Hulk grabbing the guy in the ejector seat to stop him from and just throwing him to the ground.
Yes.
That was it. Again, this is an Avengers scene. This is not a Die Hard scene.
It is a cool looking scene, but yeah, it doesn't belong in Die Hard. It belonged nowhere near Die Hard.
And I remember seeing this in the theater and looking at my friends, and we were all like, this is bullshit.
So the van carrying the bad guys and captives enters a warehouse. McClane pursues them. Gabriel orders Farrell to enter the code to decrypt the information. Farrell refuses and is shot in the knee by Gabriel,
which has to hurt.
Oh my gosh, that has to hurt.
But he sure doesn't look like it as his scenes continues.
Exactly. When Gabriel puts the gun to Lucy's head and says he will count to 10 before killing her, Farrell gives in despite her pleas to resist and begins to enter the code. McClane arrives and kills one of the henchmen, but is in turn shot in the shoulder by Gabriel. McClane dives behind a car, his gun on the ground near Farrell. McClane goes for his gun, but is grabbed by Gabriel from behind. Standing behind McClane, Gabriel taunts him and tortures him by sticking his gun into the bullet wound already in McClane's shoulder. Lucy struggles with the thug holding her, shooting him in the foot before he recovers his grip on her, and Gabriel funnily says to him, "You got her? Can you handle her?"
Which is great.
And so then Gabriel...
You sure?
Gabriel... I love the dialogue in this.
Yeah.
Gabriel tells McClane that his epitaph will read, "Always in the wrong place at the wrong time."
Because you got to have that in there.
And McClane replies that his epitaph will read, "Yippee-ki-yay, mother," and then pulls the trigger, shooting himself in the same spot again.
So and saving the PG-13 rating.
And saving the PG-13 rating, shooting himself through the shoulder and shooting Gabriel in the chest. The FBI arrive just in time and miraculously don't enter shooting, but somehow are instantly able to stop themselves, set the scene, and decide, oh, all the guys holding the guns aren't bad guys, so we won't shoot them.
Right.
So that was entirely believable.
It's just, after the F-35, it's kind of like, fuck it, yeah, I don't care.
They kind of threw out reality after that. Oh, sorry. The FBI arrive and provide medical attention to McClane. Farrell and McClane and Lucy all sort of get together and have their nice little moments. McClane and Farrell get together and respect one another. And then Farrell and Lucy McClane realize they like each other. And both Lucy and Farrell ask McClane if one spoke about the other. And at least for today, she's happy being in McClane. And that's where the movie ends with, "Please don't have me shoot you after I spent the entire day trying to save you, Matthew Farrell."
First of all, as teachers, we know if you're going to say you're going to count to 10, you count to 10. You don't stop at 5.
Nope.
And he sure doesn't know how to get a point across.
Nope.
The second thing is the pain of a bullet wound is not going to get your hacker to put a code in any faster.
Nope. If anything, it's going to slow him down a lot more.
The FBI must need more training when they walk into that warehouse.
Yeah. I'm just like, they would have been, I mean, they were in a state of terror.
Yeah.
They would have gone into that warehouse fully firing.
Right. And not to mention, for a group that spent most of its time doing a great job evading everybody, why did you just meet in one place?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you couldn't have done all this from the stupid semi you were driving around in?
Yeah, it's true.
So after the F-35, you can pretty much just go, okay, two ways. I can turn off my brain and enjoy this.
Yep.
Or I can keep my brain going because this movie has been a thinker because it's technology. Anytime technology is involved, you have to think your way through it. And all that
yep.
stuff. And now they're saying, stop thinking.
And just enjoy yourself.
Just enjoy the
pretty
the
colors.
Popcorn. Yeah, the pretty colors.
The pretty colors as we throw blood and fire all over the place.
Yeah. So that's Live Free or Die Hard.
Let's Live Free or Die Hard. Joe, what are some things that worked well?
The you're right. The dialogue worked great.
Oh, I love the dialogue.
Dialogue was great.
I think there are more one-liners in this movie than the original Die Hard.
The rapport between Bruce Willis and Justin Long's character was great. The trilogy now of Bruce Willis, Justin Long, and Kevin Smith. Which,
that was cool. Like it
was a
been
great
neat
tripod
to see another movie with those guys. But then what other movie do you tell?
Right. As bad as the CGI was in the tunnel, the F-35 scene looked great.
Yes, it did.
It looked great.
It's just not realistic at all.
No. Our roads apparently are made of paper. Anything else that I thought worked well? I like Timothy Oliphant is the bad guy.
Yeah, he was a good bad guy.
Yeah. How about you?
Things that I think worked well, the dialogue, I loved it. I enjoyed the hacking. I thought it was a great premise. Matthew Farrell's character makes it for me. Justin Long is the reason I love this movie.
That's
really
a fair reason.
Is. I love this movie because Justin Long is great in it. And what's sad is I love Justin Long so much in this movie, I can't think of another movie that I like Justin Long in.
Oh, like, there's a couple of yes-y then. I got a few for you.
Okay, because he was so good in this movie. And I have a thing for Mary Elizabeth
Winstead.
You're
not the only one. There's a lot of people out there that have a thing for
her.
And
this was before Scott Pilgrim. Like, a lot of people get it. No, I've...
This is early Mary.
Yeah, this is... I just thought, yeah.
Wait, when was Scott Pilgrim?
2009.
Okay, so it's 2 years before then.
Yeah, that's 2 years before.
All right.
What are some things that didn't work?
Okay. I get it's 2000.
And here's mine, because I'll say mine.
Okay, you go for it.
First, I can't really think of any other than the one. I said a couple during the synopsis.
Yeah.
But I figured Joe may rip into it a little bit more. But other than the ones I already mentioned, I can't think of anything else.
There is a lot of coincidental moments in this, but I think those have become a staple of Die Hard movies.
Yeah, everything about Die Hard is coincidence.
Yeah. I still, the calmness of John McClane in all these situations, just for me, doesn't feel in time with the other three movies, especially at his advanced age now.
Well, maybe that's why he's more calm, is because he's older.
I would have liked to have seen, and I can't remember to go back to this well, more competence on the government side of things. It seemed like they were always a step behind the one guy who warned them 3 or 4 years beforehand. And he's just doing the stuff that they should have planned for 3 or 4 years beforehand.
Okay.
That's
a valid gripe, yeah.
The fact that they got three states involved for money that would be useless. The plot made no sense at the end. Because if you're going to cancel out everybody and your money's not going to be worth, or it's going to be worthless, then what was the point?
I don't think it's that he's making the money worthless. I think he's not allowing anybody access to the money.
But if that's the case, then his money is worthless because you can't use money unless there's money to return back.
Well, you can still get to the banks. It's just if he drains everybody's bank accounts, they can't withdraw anything. If he has the money, then he can still go to the bank and withdraw money. Or move it to the Caymans where this hasn't happened.
Which is a shame because this has so many great, bright spots in it. It really does. It's a watchable movie. It's very watchable. And if you're not a person who's going to sit there and watch a movie and try to pick it apart, you will love this movie.
Yeah.
You will. I mean, it's
an enjoyable action movie.
It is. It has everything you could want in an action movie, in an action slash comedy, I guess. It's
yeah,
an action comedy.
It is funny.
In that you got witty dialogue, you've got a plot that makes sense on paper. You can sit there and go, okay, I can follow, A to B to B to C.
Yep.
It has a satisfying ending. I don't know if we're just at a point now where Bruce Willis doesn't need to be in these movies anymore.
Ooh.
Because outside of the action sequences, he does nothing really outside of kill the bad guy. Justin Long does all the heavy lifting. Kevin Smith does all the heavy lifting.
They do all the heavy lifting, but they wouldn't be able to be in the situation without him. It's not an Indiana Jones where you can literally pull Indiana Jones out of the movie and everything still happens.
You can't do that in Indy.
I don't know. That's what they, Big Bang Theory made that joke for one of the Indiana Jones.
Oh.
Where if you actually pulled Harrison Ford out of it, everything would still happen the way it was going to happen.
Well, it's true. Yeah, they would.
Well,
in that case, yeah. I thought you were saying if you pull him out, then you still have the movie.
No.
Yeah.
But I honestly think if you took, I understand that John McClane doesn't do a whole lot, mm-hmm. but if you take that character out, Justin Long doesn't get to anywhere. He dies at the beginning.
True. Yeah, he dies at the beginning. Yeah, you're right.
And
unless they would have found another person nearby Rutgers University.
And he also would have shut down. Justin Long wouldn't have become heroic. He wouldn't have gotten brave. He would have shut down and panicked and been like, holy cow, this fire sale is horrible. And he would have run to his bunker.
Yeah. Okay, so, hey, what did you think after watching the movie?
I still enjoy it. I really love watching this movie. And mostly for the dialogue. And just, I think... You'll make a comment when you get to the audience. I think this was the first Die Hard movie that was for me.
Okay.
I watched the one before, but this was the first one I bought.
Yeah.
I actually bought this DVD.
Yeah. It's fun, exciting. It's got a lot of problems that can be easily overlooked. You can.
Yep.
It's all right. You're not going to feel bad about it. If somebody makes you feel bad about it, tell them to fuck off.
There you go.
All right. Who's the audience?
I think everybody should see this movie. It's a good movie.
And I said, you know, this is an audience, the generation after Die Hard came out. If your first exposure to Die Hard was this movie, it's probably your favorite.
And I agree with you.
Yeah. If it's the fourth movie you've seen, then it's probably number two or three because you'll revere Die Hard more. Die Hard 2 obviously is dead last.
No, that's,
so fa-
good
so
Lord,
far.
That's horrible.
I think we'll find one that's worse than Die Hard 2 next week.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it yet, so I'm intrigued.
Yeah, you're going to have trouble with that one.
Okay.
Yeah. So, movie report card, sir. What are you giving this?
A-.
An A-. Okay, I'm going to give it a solid B.
Solid B?
Yeah, I'm going to give it just because it's a great movie.
But you have pointed out a lot of things that you can either choose to forgive, but there's still things that you noticed.
And there are things that I noticed. They're not things that everybody should notice.
Yeah.
Again, we look at things with a much more critical eye than your average viewer does.
Yep.
And although this is a casual movie cast, I feel the need that at some point, it's nice to shed some light to some of these things to open them up. I don't want to honest trailer this crap because they tend to just ruin movies.
Yeah.
But these are things that you can overlook. It's okay if you do.
Yep.
So B and A minus, we're looking at an average of a B plus.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I like this is a good movie.
Solid place for it.
Yep.
Well, that's all I got time for today, Movie Planeteers. You can email the Movie Planet using the address movieplanetpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to pass the word on to your friends about the show. Subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Overcast, Podbean, or Spotify, and help the show get on its feet with a 4 or 5 star review. Tweet with any questions, comments, theories, and I'll try to fit them into the show next time we're on the air. Send those tweets to @MoviePlanetPod and like us on Facebook and Instagram using the links in the show notes. Special thanks to Twisterium and Sound J Music for providing our intro music and our ending music. Thanks for listening, and happy movie watching.